Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Hey, before we jump in, I want to tell you about New York Times Audio, a new iOS app for New York Times All Access and new subscribers. It's got our show, plus other great podcasts from The Athletic, exclusive shows, narrated articles, and more. That's New York Times Audio. Download it now at nytimes.com/audio app.
This is The Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Greetings and welcome to Starkville.
Baseball Hall of Famer Jason Stark.
And then the robot said, strike.
That's why you're going in the Hall of Fame.
It's an inside the park home run, Doug Glanville.
Mike Trout is coffee at Starbucks with a double latte skinny.
Doug, are you ready to make some podcast magic?
I am ready. Bring on the magic wand. Let's do it.
Greetings and welcome to Starkville, now part of the Athletic Baseball Show, where you'll find great baseball talk all week long and all season long. I'm Jason Stark. I write about baseball for The Athletic, and I am joined once again by my good friend, writer, broadcaster, professor, distinguished former major leaguer, and the voice of Sunday Night Baseball on ESPN Radio, Doug Glanville. Whew. Takes a long time to introduce Doug Glanville, man. But Doug, we're happy to welcome back our pal Ken Rosenthal this week. But first, there's something I've been meaning to ask you. Is that okay?
Oh, yeah. I'm ready.
Okay. I've noticed something. Every week before Sunday Night Baseball, you and your lovable play-by-play man, John Boog Shambi, You're both highly lovable, right? You post a photo of yourselves in the booth to get people ready for the broadcast, and welcome them to join you for the evening. And the way you do this, what's the word for these photos that you post? I'm going to go with scary.
Artistic?
Scary. The photos are scary. You both look like you're ready to throw a punch at your listeners and not have fun calling a baseball game. You're two fun guys. So I wanted to ask you, what the heck is up with that?
Yes. We like the traffic and contradiction. Yes, we enjoy that. But the fun part is looking for the site, because sometimes we're not in the booth. We found that throne that the Astros have. I don't know if Dusty Baker sat in it, but it was some chair from like 14th century. So we're always looking around. Right now I'm looking for a base that I can slide in and have Boog be the shortstop or something. But so far it hasn't worked yet. But yeah, you're going to find us all over the place. And you know, it's fun that we go to all these parks, and after a while you go and you learn that there's these little cool nooks and crannies outside the locker room. So, so I kind of enjoy finding these shots. But the real spirit of it is like an 80s album cover, 70s album cover. We're trying to like go back to Hall & Oates, Tears for Fears, whoever, some duo, and, Peaches and Herb, something. So, that's the fun. So we clown around and try to find it. And sometimes we're just in the booth and we just grab something and try to come up with it. So yeah, that's it. But it's focused. We're very focused for first pitch. Yes.
Okay. It's just focused. Yes, that's focused. All. It seems like meanness, but it's actually focused.
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay. All right. So just try to be nice while you're in Starkville, at least.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of a Starkville bylaw. Yeah, yeah. No scowling.
Oh, yeah. All fun. All fun and games. Yes.
Okay. That'll work. Hey, Doug, I think it's time to go through our keychains and find that key to the city that we once handed to our friend Ken Rosenthal, because he is back in Starkville. Yeah. Can we all agree no one's visited us here more than Ken?
Yeah, I think that's about right. I mean, well, I already ran out of statues, so we got to come up with maybe another area, like the press box. We could give him a press box.
Give this some thought, yeah. Okay? And anyway, Ken's here. Ken! Welcome back, my friend. How many times do you think that you have wandered aimlessly into the Starkville city limits?
I would say 5. I don't know. I wander aimlessly all over the place. So sometimes I cross into Starkville, sometimes I don't. It's just a matter of
It's got to be more than 5.
I don't know.
If it's only 5, we failed. We could be something like that. Hey, listen, Ken is literally the man who needs no introduction, but we'll give him one anyway. He writes tirelessly for The Athletic. There's no better reason to subscribe to The Athletic than him. He has a daily presence in The Windup. That's our indispensable new baseball newsletter with Levi Weaver. You might have heard Ken works the sideline for Fox. Not that there's any such thing as an actual sideline in baseball. He hosts
dugout reporter. Dugout.
Dugout reporter. That'll work.
I'm not in the dugout.
He hosts the
field reporter. But I'm not on the field.
Okay, we don't know what you. We know you wear a bow tie.
Right.
So he does that. Okay. He hosts the Fair Territory podcast, but appears on the Foul Territory YouTube show and podcast. So Ken, did I miss anything? Regular follower of Springsteen set list, maybe something like that.
Yeah, that would all cover it pretty much. Yep, that's about it.
All right. Well, you know, Ken brags on his Twitter bio that he's 5'4" and a half. So later in this segment, stay tuned for America's favorite new game, Know Your Short Guy Trivia.
Jason, before we get started, yes. May I say one thing? My wife contends that I am no longer 5'4" and a half, that I've actually shrunk since we've gotten married. Now, I've not updated the bio because the whole thing's too embarrassing to begin with, but I might have to update it at some point.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, well, that could affect some of the questions. So don't update it before the end of the show.
I'm not getting any taller. Don't worry about it.
Okay. All right. Well, that's still an issue for these questions, but let's move on. I think we should start with what else? The trade deadline, since it's coming up in a little over 2 months. You know, I normally have a rule about not talking about the deadline before Memorial Day, but we got you here. Memorial Day is coming up this weekend. So I want to ask you what you think. I know it's way too early to know who's buying, who's selling, but we never let that stop us in the past. So why don't we start with best pitcher and hitter who could get traded at the deadline? And why don't we start with pitcher? What do you think?
All right, Jason. First of all, let me preface this by saying, in the limited conversations I've had with people in the game about the deadline, they're not impressed with the players who might be available. So that is one thing to keep in mind as we start. Now, granted, at this time last year, we didn't know Juan Soto would be available. He became available. So things change all the time. Things can happen. But as we sit here today, I'm going to give you what you might think is a surprising answer for the pitcher. And it's still Corbin Burnes. Because I don't believe the Brewers are going to be able to sustain first place, which is where they are right now. Not with Brandon Woodruff on the IL, not with Wade Miley on the IL, not with Aaron Ashby on the IL. This is a team with very thin margins to begin with. And I am betting, or not betting, but I am talking about the Cardinals and thinking that they're going to win this division by 10 games. In fact, I said this on the air the other night, and John Smoltz and Joe Davis were kind of like, what? But they've made up 5 games in 16 days here. And by July, they could be up 5 games. I would not be shocked at all. And we saw what the Brewers did last year when they were really still in contention. They traded Josh Hader. That's a team that has to operate in this fashion, moving pieces as they go along, knowing that they won't be able to afford them final years of arbitration and lose them in free agency. They might just determine, if they don't see a real path to a division title, that they're better off trading Burns than going to arbitration with him one more time. It's gone so well. So I would say Corbin Burns. Yeah. The obvious names are Giolito and perhaps Dylan Cease, though I don't know if the White Sox would go that far. But I'm sticking with Corbin Burns.
So your first prediction is that the number one seller will be a team that's now in first place. Okay. So that just tells you how much can happen in baseball in 2 months. I thought Eduardo Rodriguez might make your list. You didn't even
I didn't mention him, but I should have. And yeah, he's one of the hottest pitchers in the game right now, and he's going to go. There's no question about that. I don't think he is Corbin Burns, at least track record-wise, but Eduardo is pitching great. He's left-handed. He has an opt-out at the end of the year, and guess what? He's going bye-bye. So you might as well get something for him while you can, and I fully expect that he's going to be on the move.
Yeah, he's got to be. All right. What about best hitter you think will get traded?
I'll go with the White Sox on this one, Tim Anderson. And he has a year beyond this one as far as club control is concerned, very affordable. But what are the White Sox doing? I thought at the start of the year, okay, hey, La Russa's gone. Pedro Grifol's in. Camp happy. Spring training. Everybody's great. We'll see. Well, we've seen. It's not good. And they're going to make some moves. There's no question about that. Anderson, he's had injuries, of course, but in my view, he needs a change. It would be beneficial to him. We saw in the World Baseball Classic the impact he can make. He looks like a Dodger to me, if ever there was one.
Good call. Now, see, I would go with a team he just said was going to win their division by 10 games. The Cardinals have to trade an outfielder, right? They have to trade an outfielder. Tyler O'Neill, Lars Nootbaar, whoever it might be.
Can't trade Lars, what?
Like, I know we're all mixed up here.
Can't trade Lars. You know, they have a candy bar named after this man.
He's one of their best players.
Yeah.
But they do have a glut of outfielders. And the problem they have, Jason, and I was in St. Louis this weekend, talked to some people about this. Juan Yepes, Nolan Gorman, Jordan Walker, Alec Burleson. Take Gorman out of it. He's a monster right now. He's leading the majors in OPS and OPS plus. He's not going anywhere. But those three guys that I mentioned, Walker, Yepes, and Burleson, they're all similar, not great defenders. And in my view, the Cardinals waited too long. They should have done something in the offseason to get either Sean Murphy or Pablo Lopez or even both. And yes, it would have cost them precious prospects. But that would have sealed them even more as a division favorite, despite their awful start. And at some point, this team has to have World Series aspirations again. They haven't been there since 13, haven't won since 11. Yeah, it's nice to win the division every year, but you've got Flaherty, Wainwright, and Montgomery all in walk years. You've got Paul Goldschmidt, a free agent after next year. No reason to wait any longer. Let's go.
Yeah. Well, they have to find somebody they can trade to upgrade rotation. So we'll see who that is. I'm going to guess Doug wants to ask you about the guy who's a pitcher and a hitter.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a guy named Shohei Ohtani, if you've heard of him. Yeah, is he lefty or something? Sometimes. Oh, yeah. Can he pitch lefty? He probably could pitch lefty. I hadn't thought about that. But, yeah, Shohei Ohtani. I mean, what in the world happened here? I mean, this has got to be, do you give him a country or a bank, or maybe like a planet? You can give him a planet. Yeah.
Well, first of all, if we're talking about the trade deadline, I would not expect him to be traded really under any circumstances, unless they completely collapsed. And even then, he's a potential free agent. You're trading 2 months of him when you could have had the moon for him at the deadline last year when he had a year plus control remaining. So they're five out right now. They're not in a great spot, but they're competing. And they've actually had some things go against them. Shohei has not been great on the mound. Trout has not been great at the plate. You've seen the bullpen blow up a few times. Rendon gets suspended. He gets hurt. Things are not all copacetic there. And yet, they're still kind of in this thing. They're 2 over .500. So I expect he stays. That's for one thing. Now, as for the bidding, if he doesn't pitch better this season, that changes this whole $500 million conversation. If he's just an average starter, he's still unbelievable. We all know this, and we'd all love to have him. But is he $500 million? I don't know that. Now, do I expect him to pitch better? Yes, he's Shohei Ohtani. He's going to figure it out. But we have to wait for the season to play out yet. I know I saw all these predictions, $500 million, $600 million. Everybody's got a number in their head. Let's see what happens. Let's see if he's healthy at the end of the year. Let's just see where this is before we start really assessing what might happen in free agency with him.
Did you just call him an average starter?
No, I said
he's pretty close to leading the league in strikeouts.
What if he ends up an average starter? He's not leading the league in ERA, Jason. And he's got
no. He's had a little bust out of home run fever.
Mm-hmm.
And he hadn't experienced at all before that.
Again, it's relatively early in the season, and he could get it going on the mound again. Maybe he won't. But if he is, what I was saying was, if he is an average starter, ends up an average starter this season, then it's a different conversation entirely.
True. I'll take the over on average starter. I'll take the over on any number you threw out there for his contract. Any number. Okay. Seriously.
No, yeah, I hear you. I understand that. And I'm kind of giving the other side, but the Dodgers could pay it for sure. The Mets could pay it. And guess what?
I rest my case. If it's a Dodgers-Mets bidding war, how's it going to be under?
Well, guess what, too? Other teams also can pay it. Other teams can afford it, but they don't want to. So I do expect that he'll be quite in demand. And again, I'm kind of painting a worst case scenario there. And all I'm saying, Jason, is we have to let the season play out a little bit and let this whole thing breathe. We might have a different view by September than we do right now. It's possible. It's not out of the question.
All right. Well, what if he's like, you know, MVP Cy Young? What are you looking at if he's just?
Well, then we're looking at a lot of money. We're probably looking at a lot of money regardless. Jason's right. Bet the over. Pick a number. Bet the over. But if he's MVP Cy Young type, like last year, for instance, if he was like he was last year, who wouldn't want it? And I guess the question going forward is, how long can he sustain it? But that has always been the question. And he's answered every question. He's done this. People thought, oh, no, he should just ditch one or the other. He's not going to be able to succeed. Oh, really? We would have been deprived of seeing one of the all-time greats in performance. And it would have kind of eaten at his soul. This guy loves it. He wants to do both. Yeah. So it's always going to be there, that question. But, man, it's hard to bet against him, too.
Let me remind you, they changed the rules of baseball for him. They did.
Yes, they did.
That's amazing. All right, let's talk about managers, since you just wrote a column about this in The Athletic. You ran through every manager with basically any level of uncertainty about his future. I want to ask you about a few I find really interesting. I'd like to start with Joe Mazzulla of the Celtics. Oh, wait, I'm sorry, wrong sport. Got mixed up there. You know, Dan Shaughnessy in his column in the Boston Globe today called him Grady Mazzulla.
Oh, no. So,
I'm kind of hung up on that.
That's great.
But let's move on. Since we're talking so much Cardinals here, Oliver Marmol of the Cardinals, how would you appraise his future?
Solid. And the reason I think it's solid is because John Mozeliak dumped Mike Matheny to get Mike Schilt. He dumped Mike Schilt to get Oliver Marmol. Mike Schilt had been a very successful manager. You only get so many chances at this. And he could perhaps dismiss Marmol, but then it comes back to him. And most executives don't like it coming back to them. So I don't see that being an issue. In fact, they're playing really well right now. And as long as they have a stable rest of the season, this won't even be a question. The reason it's a question at the moment is because they started so poorly. They were 10 games out in the worst division in the majors on May 6th. And he had the incident with O'Neill, or the controversy with O'Neill, the questions about whether he was running hard and all that. That was not a good look. It did not come off well publicly. And then, of course, the Contreras situation, which was more of a global involving the front office type of deal. But also
a problem.
Also very problematic. He's playing the outfield. He's not playing the outfield. He's DHing. Whoa, wait, he's catching again. All of these things were going on. They admittedly did not handle it well. Now the question is, where does that go from here? And again, I was there this weekend. They're putting a happy face on it. Basically, we had one rough week, but it's going to get us to five great years. And we had to go through this. This is okay. I'm not buying it. Wilson Contreras, I love him. Cares as much as anyone in the game. Great offensive player. The defensive part of it is not his specialty. It's not his thing. Now, he's working at it. He's trying. And they're pitching better of late. But will we be saying the same thing in August and September and in 2024, 25? I don't know that. The track record does not indicate that. So that is a question that's going to linger. And yes, people will be watching to see how Marmol handles it and see how this team fares the rest of the way. I expect them again to win the division. But beyond that, I don't know.
Well, you think about, like, you know, you're following Yadier Molina, because I was in St. Louis, you know, like not too long ago. And you're following Yadier Molina. You're also following someone that managed the entire game, you know, and it's like you come from one system to another and all of a sudden you have all this responsibility that may be different from the culture from where you came from, for better or for worse. Every team has its own approach of who controls the game. So I imagine that was a huge mountain. And then you look at the, and this is something we talked to Marmol about generally, but, you know, you look at the WBC and, you know, you don't have pitchers around that you, you know, because they were all, half the staff was somewhere else and you're new. It's a lot to learn. So I do wonder if that once you get some sort of rhythm and you learn the strategy of how to prepare for a game in a system where you're trying, they're encouraging you to have more control, that he might embrace that and really run with it. So that's what I'm curious
about. You're absolutely right. Yeah. You're absolutely right. And the pitch clock was another X factor here.
Yeah.
You're coming into a new staff with the pitch clock. Pitchers who hadn't shaken off a catcher in 20 years. He was the guy running the show.
Yeah.
So I get all that, but I still say, and I wrote this, I'll say it again. The move was curious to me. You're going from the best defensive catcher, arguably of our era and maybe of all time, to a guy who had serious questions surrounding him regarding his game calling, his defensive preparation, all of that. This was no secret in the industry. You could have traded for Sean Murphy, used your glut of outfielders to do that, didn't do that. You could have maybe even signed a lesser free agent like Christian Vasquez, more proven defender. You didn't do that. You went to Wilson Contreras, and then after 5 weeks, you said he's not going to catch for a while. And then you turned it around again a week later. I understand transitions can be rocky. We all get that. And we all get he's following a legend. But it just seems to me there's more going on here than meets the eye, and we'll see how it plays out.
We could spend a lot of time on this, but let's move on. Another manager that you mentioned in your column, Buck Showalter of the Mets. How would you assess his future?
A week ago, when they were kind of middling along and hadn't started this amazing five-game winning streak with the baby Mets and the one-run wins every night, two dramatic extra-inning wins, I was starting to hear some things, starting to hear some questions, and it's kind of natural, the most expensive team in history, and you've got an owner with no track record of patience or impatience. You just don't know. So I could see if this season goes badly and – for instance, they don't make the playoffs, depending on the circumstances, of course, that maybe they don't bring him back. He's got a year left after this year. At the same time, is Buck Showalter the reason that the Mets have had so many pitching injuries and went with an older rotation and had some other issues? No. And this idea that has come up in New York about how he doesn't like young players, I understand that most veteran managers prefer veteran players. But my goodness, they're playing Brett Beatty at third. They're catching Alvarez. Now they've got Vientos. And granted, he's a little harder to squeeze into their lineup for a variety of reasons. Buck is hardly running from these guys. He's embracing them. So I expect they're going to be okay. Yesterday was a great day for them. To see Scherzer and Verlander on the same day finally pitch like that was amazing. But if they don't make the playoffs – with the most expensive team in history, I don't expect they're going to run it back with the same crew.
Yeah, I have a word here about Steve Cohen and his track record. He may not have a baseball track record. He has a track record. And if you look at the way he handled underperformance in his previous life, how'd that go for the people who were viewed to be underperforming? they were all looking for work, right? Every one of them. So he has a track record of being incredibly demanding, not afraid to fire anybody in the hedge fund world. So I think everybody that took a job there knew that going in, including Buck. All right, one more name on the manager front. Craig Counsell of the Brewers was a really interesting name to see on your list because he's one of those guys that I feel like everybody in the sport has so much admiration for. It's very rare you hear people on other teams go out of their way to tell you what a great manager Craig Counsell is. And it's true. So how could he be on your list?
Simply because he's in the last year of his contract and he doesn't have an extension yet. Now, that's kind of by his own choice. He just wants to let the season play out and see where he is at the end of the year. He's the longest tenured manager in the National League. I believe his first year was 15, middle of 15.
That's right.
So he might simply want to take a break at the end of this season. But who knows? We don't know what he's thinking. Is it conceivable that he's kind of getting tired of the situation in Milwaukee where they're so limited with payroll? It could be. I don't know. And if he got out there, if he was not back in Milwaukee next year and was effectively a managerial free agent, he would be one hot managerial free agent for all the reasons you just said, Jason. So he is an interesting name because simply he's unsigned. And a lot of these things are driven by the contractual situation, right? Dusty Baker, well, last year for him. So something's going to happen. And it's the same with Counsell.
Well, yeah, I mean, you mentioned Dusty. I mean, in terms of just the way you have these veteran managers, I mean, what has been your sort of insights as to the experience coming back to the fold? You know, you've had, you know, the new regime came in, there's all these young managers coming in, and then all of a sudden, you know, Dusty, Showalter, all these, I mean, what has that kind of meant to the marketplace?
Doug, it has shown me, and it seems like it's shown executives that, oh, these guys still can do it. They're pretty good. Bob Melvin, I would put in this category as well. Veteran manager, he was never really out of the game. Of course, he was with the A's forever, but there's a value to experience. There's a value to knowing how to do the job that, in my view, was dismissed too easily in recent years when teams were looking for the next hot thing, which I interpreted to mean the next manager they could control, right? That's part of what's going on here with this era of collaboration. So it's not so easy to collaborate with some of the veteran managers. They have their own ideas, and that's fine too. And that actually is healthy. So teams should be looking for that. Now, I don't know that we have the same number of former managers out there that are great candidates to come back as there were when Showalter and Bochy were out, but it seems to me there is a value to experience, and it should never have been dismissed. And perhaps now it's being more respected again.
You know, Ken, you had an incredible story last week from what I think was the most interesting series of the week and maybe the whole season. Yankees, Blue Jays, Aaron Judge, what, Glancegate, is that what we're calling it? You know, you think that, yeah, exactly. You think that a guy standing at home plate would be looking at the pitcher with a pitch about to come roaring at him, right? Instead, you got Aaron Judge up there, his eyes shooting to the right, and the TV cameras catch it. And the Blue Jays announcers, Dan Shulman, Buck Martinez, rightly question, what is this? What's this all about? Well, thanks to you, we know now what it was all about. Why don't you tell everybody out there what Aaron Judge was actually doing?
Well, I can't say with any total certainty I know what he was doing because I don't know how this all was communicating between whoever was communicating to Judge and how it was all going down. I do know, because I talked to the pitcher involved, Jay Jackson, that Jay believes he was tipping pitches. And he was informed of that after the game. And then the next day, they brought it up even more. And the Yankees evidently caught on to this. The Yankees are quite good at picking up stuff like this, as are a number of teams. And the only thing that's really not known here is where he was getting the information from. It seems like it was the first base coach. It had to be the first base coach who was signaling, but the way Jackson said he was tipping with the rhythm of his delivery, that's something that Judge could have been picking up himself. Now, when I first heard this, I heard that what the sign or what the key was that he was bringing his glove up around his ear and therefore exposing his grip to the first base coach, Travis Chapman. Then Chapman would see, flash to Judge some kind of signal, and that was that. When Jackson said it was more the rhythm of his delivery, if it was that, Judge could have been just glancing at him himself and figuring out, you know, faster down here for fastball, slower for slider, whatever. But why was Judge looking at first base then? It seems to me he was looking at first base because the first base coach was signaling to him what was coming. By the way, all perfectly legal. This is the kind of stuff we love. This is the kind of stuff that makes smart players and coaches look really good. Now, there is some question, and Doug, I want to ask you this. I got a text from a veteran major league pitcher the next day. I've heard from multiple people since then. If the Jays thought that Judge was getting a signal from the first base coach, well, there's an easy solution to that. You knock him down. And that just doesn't happen anymore. But even Jay Jackson said to me, I have no problem with a guy at second base flashing a sign to the hitter. I got no problem with that. That's fine. That's all within it. He goes, a coach? No. But at the same time, nothing was done about it because that kind of thing, and I'm not advocating to go throw at people's heads, but you guys, Doug, in your day, police the game yourselves. That doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah, it's definitely a different culture with it. And look, some of the Neanderthal stuff, I think it's okay that it's gone a little bit, but you know, because you throw at someone and then you think they're getting out of the way one direction and they, you know, it still can be dangerous. But I think there was, you know, certainly messages sent that there's ways you can get signs and there's a skill, absolutely. And, you know, whatever those lines are determined for the period of time that you're playing, the era that you're in, will dictate like how you can retaliate, so to speak, or how you send the message. Yeah, I don't know how you get the first base coach, but, you know, there's no doubt, like, the only team that was very big into this that I played for was the Rangers, of course, with Buck Showalter, 2003. and when we were on second base, you know, we talked about like, okay, kick the bag if you do this, if you have the signs. I thought it was too complicated because I'm like, can I steal third? It's a lot easier. But but there was definitely that discussion about, but if you got caught, you kind of knew that someone had to wear it. And I think even we recognized that was okay because that's what we would probably have done. But today it's like the replay. You don't argue with the umpire now. You don't even look at him. You just point into the dugout. You're like, that's all you see now. There's no argument. So they're just like out of the equation. You don't even deal with the person.
Okay. Now, all right. There's a lot here. You dug into it in the story you wrote, Ken. I want to talk about it a little bit because here I think is one of the big questions. Like I tweeted about Judge something over the weekend or retweeted somebody, and there was this instant reaction from people. Well, that guy's a cheater now. Okay. And I think because of the Astros, people have a really tough time distinguishing between what is cheating and what is treading that line of the kind of gamesmanship that we've seen in baseball for the last 100 years. So first off, do you agree that that line has been blurred, that people don't even know the difference anymore?
Yes, I do agree with that. And actually, Jason, that day, my original intention was to write a column saying this wasn't cheating. And I even wrestled with that because I thought it was so obvious that it wasn't cheating, like the Astros cheated, even like the Red Sox and other teams that use the video replay room cheated. But we talked about it and we determined, you know what? Yes, write it because people don't understand the difference. Now, there's a couple of things going on here. One, people don't understand the difference. And this time-honored method of using your eyes and your hands to steal signs and communicate signs, that's all well within the rules. In fact, it's part of baseball's glorious gamesmanship that we see. And there are players who are renowned for this. Chase Utley was one. He was brilliant at it. So that is something to be celebrated, not condemned. The other issue here is social media. And everybody runs their mouth. And everyone has an idea of what they think is proper or not. And everyone is quick to label someone without knowing the facts. So in the story I ultimately wrote, and I ended up writing that story because I got Jay Jackson on the phone, but I wrote that the Astros thing has kind of colored everything. And it's changed people's perceptions, but it's also forced them to look at everything with a cynical eye, which is unfortunate. Now, we can go back and blame the league for that. We can go all through the history there. But it seems to me a smart fan, and there are millions of smart fans in our game, follow the game regularly, they know the difference. And the yo-yos on social media, and there are yo-yos on social media. I'm sorry if you're offended. But they're going to scream no matter what. Aaron Judge is a cheater. This guy's a cheater. This guy's doing that. Ken, why don't you report on this team? I saw black things on his shirt. There must be some sticky stuff. It's nonstop. And it's this conspiratorial society we live in now where everybody thinks something's not cool. And it's just not right. Judge wasn't cheating. Jay Jackson said he wasn't cheating. End of story.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, now there's one more element here, and this is the part that makes it complicated, which is how a lot of teams figure out pitch tipping these days. With video, with algorithms, every team has these surefire methods to catch every tip. Okay, and I know it's still legal, as long as you don't do it during the games. You can apply all the video and all the algorithms you want between games, after games, before games. So it's not the same thing as Chase Utley or Buck Showalter or Davey Lopes or all the eagle eyes from past generations sitting in the dugout trying to spot this stuff with their eyes. But it's different. It is different. And I'm curious where this fits in this very subtle tapestry we're trying to weave here of what's legal and what's not legal. Doug, I'm actually curious, where would you stand on that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I've definitely paid a lot of attention with the Astros and, you know, in terms of figuring out the line of technology. And I think it's like very similar to what we grapple with in any part of society. It's like where technology plays a role and where are the lines drawn? You know, I have four kids. I'm like, all right, you know, social media, you know, how on and off. So I think in sport, because technology can certainly create certain shortcuts of getting information, you know, and trying to control it, which is real a near impossibility, but you could at least try to regulate it on certain levels. And so to me, it's the use of technology. And at the core, you hope that, you know, the player skill set is sort of the foundation of it, even if you're inputting that information into something, but it's still foundational. And then the game plays and you're in the game and just, you know, sort of play ball. And that's the concern that you have is if you don't have some pushback, you just eventually end up in a video game. And maybe that's what happens, but eventually that's what happens. You say, okay, I'm going to calculate this. And I remember talking to Dave Roberts in LA last season, and he was like, Freddie Freeman was like, get off your iPads and watch the game. He's like, get off. It's like in between pitches, you're like, everybody's like, and it's like, I feel like I'm a parent, you know, just yelling at these guys to screen time. So, so that is the line. And so, yes, if you're able to study, and that's the tools that is available to you, I understand you go and look at your video and you see, okay, this guy's tipping. I think that's fine. You're preparing. But it's just the in-game advantages that you can get by using that technology that really, to me, is the difference. You're trying to, like, let them play, you know, play ball. you get information, but it's not real time. And if it is, it's because you, in some analog baseball way, so to speak, you made your judgment in the moment. I know that the catcher opens up his right knee a little bit when I'm on first base because he's calling a curveball. He's setting up higher, so he's about to go into his block so I can run. Okay, that's cool. And maybe I figure that out in the fifth inning after talking to Bobby Abreu. I understand you share that information. And to me, that's what's one big difference today is the shared information. You realize that pitchers didn't talk to hitters. You know, in my generation, there wasn't like, oh, I talked to hitter. You didn't want to, because I have to hit against you. But I feel like there's much more free-flowing information. Like what I found out as a leadoff hitter, I talked to the guy who's sitting seventh and sixth, and the data's there. And you have a free exchange so that we all know what this pitcher is doing. I think that's been part of the evolution, and I think that's fine. I just try to make sure that you still have an element of like minimizing in the game in real time and using technology to get those advantages.
Jason, I'll add one thing to that, and it's kind of an extension of what Doug is saying. All right, let's say the sport determines it's not happy with the studying that's going on before the game through video and algorithms and all that. Well, how would you enforce that? How would you ever determine what teams are doing before games and police that?
I know.
You can do it during games, and they've done a better job, it seems, of that. They've gotten rid of some things. They've put more monitors, human monitors in, and it seems to me that this stuff is way diminished if it's not gone entirely, but I don't know how you would ever enforce it between games.
Yeah, it's so true. We could go way, way down this rabbit hole. I was on the radio in Toronto last week. We were talking about this. And I use this example. Kevin Gausman. Now, he's mostly been awesome every start this year, right? Except there were two starts where he gave up 8 runs. One to the Astros, the other to the Red Sox, managed by Alex Cora. Okay, so did he just not have it that night? Or was there something else going on? Like, we don't need to go down the rabbit hole. But when a great pitcher, for example, has a bad day, I don't think of it the same anymore. Well, that's, since I read Evan Drellick's book,
yes,
I can't.
Exactly right. And that's the sad outgrowth of what happened in 2017 and 18, that we don't have the same trust that we once did. And it almost goes back to the steroid era and the same kind of thing. It's hard to trust a hitter who suddenly starts hitting for power. We've been colored along these lines to think differently, and it's hard not to.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, it's definitely true, Ken. And I think that was the biggest disservice, you know, the steroid era and all these things. It's like the authenticity is questioned, and you really just can't put it back. I mean, you know, as voters, right, you're trying to figure out Hall of Fame, and it's like, there's just times people just threw their hands up, gave up because it was just impossible. And so that is the shame of it. I don't know. Hopefully in generations and we could kind of claw back and figure it out, but there'll be a new issue at some point. And yes, so hopefully we learn from that.
As my friend Lindsay Adler said recently, players love to cheat. So they're going to look for edges. That's just the nature of it. It's human nature. It's just the way it is.
You know, I can't believe we've talked about baseball in 2023 for all of this time. We still haven't talked about the new rules. Here's my question, Ken. Is there anything about what you've seen this season that has surprised you, knowing that there was going to be impact from these rules?
Well, I will start off by saying I was a heck of a lot more enlightened after I read your most recent column, because there were things that were going on that I was not aware of. I was not seeing, such as the ball through the first base hole and how that's opened up. These things, which are inevitable consequences of the rules that have been put in place, you don't always see them as clearly as you should or as clearly as you outlined in that story. So have I been surprised by anything? Honestly, the biggest surprise to me is how fast the games are. And I know that's a relatively small thing when we're talking about the actual changes in the play itself, but it's quicker and it's a lot different watching a game now, a lot more pleasurable in my opinion, because there's constant motion, not always constant balls in play, as you pointed out. And that is something that as we go forward, and it doesn't qualify as a surprise one way or the other. I didn't expect the balls in play situation to change dramatically, that the average would go up this year significantly, because hitting styles haven't changed. What I would like to see, what I'm eager to see over the years now, is do hitting styles change? Do pitching styles change as a result of the clock? Is there less of an emphasis on velocity with pitching because you've got to preserve yourself in different ways? How does it play out with the injuries? And these are all questions that, Jason, I expect you'll be writing about for years, because the game has changed in a huge way, actually multiple ways. And we don't have, as you pointed out in that story, we don't have a full grasp of this yet. Some things still have to kind of play out. And I can't say I'm surprised by that. I fully expected that, honestly. But at the same time, it's curious to me that the batting average on balls in play, which you would think without shifts would go way up, is not, that's not really what's going on.
Yeah, it's in certain situations. You kind of mentioned this, because this has really jumped out at me as somebody who's watching this stuff way too closely. How big that hole is on the right side when there's a runner on first, the second baseman has to shade towards second if he wants to turn a double play. And so the average of left-handed hitters, when they hit a ground ball to the right side, when that man's on first, is up 80 points.
Yeah, that was the most interesting thing in the story to me.
Unbelievable. Yes. And then that leads to all these first to thirds on singles that we're seeing, the highest rate over any full season since 1996. I knew all this stuff was a possibility, but now that you actually see the numbers, it's happening. And as you just said, the most interesting part now is how will teams adjust on every side of the ball to that?
Jason, I'm going to blow your horn a little bit here, because the work that you've done on this, it helps all of us understand better what is going on. And I'll say this, and I tell this to Jason all the time when we're talking together, but I don't say it publicly because I don't get the opportunity. There's nobody else writing about this. So there's nobody else laying it out in ways that Jason is, so we can understand it. And it's incredibly valuable, especially at a time like this when, hey, there was not just one rule that changed. Three major things happened, and they're all kind of interconnected, but not exactly, and there's different outcomes. So, hey, man, kudos to you on this, because it's been awesome. This last piece, it opened my eyes in a lot of ways and forces me to look at the game differently, which is the highest compliment you can get, really.
I appreciate that. You know, that, like, the story behind that story was I actually started to write this last September, okay, because there was nobody on base, and we documented that. And then, the season was racing along. There's a lot of other stuff going on, and we thought, let's just wait. We're going to have all these rule changes next year. Let's see how the game changes. And it's just been so interesting to watch. I know I'm curious. That's good. I'm a little out there. I don't know if that's good or bad, but I watch the game so differently now. I don't know. Doug, what about you? Sometimes I think I'm the only one that's really digging in on this.
Yeah. Well, what I love about, what you're writing is, it sort of takes that anecdotes and puts it into data, right? It puts you into something. And so I've been just doing all these games on the weekend and just kind of going, okay, well, it's clear there's more first to thirds. It seems like it, it's all like, it feels right, but I didn't have the information. But there's no doubt, I was fascinated at, excuse me, I was fascinated at the shift. And 1 second. Okay. Well, I was fascinated at the shift where now the infielders are closer, right? They can't be way out in the grass and take these rounded angles, which allows them to get the ball. Now it's like 110 mile an hour. It's by them. They can't react. So even when you're in the right quote position, you're shallower, right? So it's a depth thing that I was really paying attention to. And we saw it last night. I did the Guardians Mets, doubleheader game two in particular. And Lindor got that check swing, base hit to left center that ended up scoring the key run. And what was interesting, it was like, quote, a hit and run. And when he, you know, the fielder, I think it was Arias, when he was coming in, he was playing behind second base at shortstop, and he went to cover on a, like the runner being in motion, and then he destroyed his angle, right? Because he's coming in shallower, and now when the ball is hit one side, he was too close. He couldn't cut the angle off. So I was like, okay, that's an example. Like just being out of position and trying to cover. Because if you were a shortstop in a traditional position, let's say, and it might be a hit and run, you would have been moving towards second, but you wouldn't have been at second already and just literally driving and running straight to home plate. That kind of angle is a nightmare in baseball, right? Because you're literally going straight in one direction with no margin for error in any direction. And I, that has been really noticeable to me about where they're positioning. They can't be on the grass, right? And the angles they're giving up on because of it. And so it made sense to me that a lot of balls on the right side were getting through, choppers all of a sudden. And look, that's exciting. And when we talked to Terry Francona, I told him that when I was doing the research around first to thirds and all that, I said the Guardians seem like a team that would be a huge beneficiary of it because they did that all last year. Singles, base stealers, first to thirds, Miles Straw, Stephen Kwan, and so on. And but you know, they're not getting on base to do it. But that is sort of one way I thought a team like that could rise from the ashes, because they are any team that speed, good base running, and goes first to third and puts the ball in play. That seemed like a recipe for gaining some wins this season more than ever.
You know, I'll tell you an irony of that story you just told. I don't think there's any infielder that I talked to all spring training who complained more about not being able to have his feet on the grass than Francisco Lindor.
Still talking about it.
Right? Yeah. Still talking about it. So, about that. All right, we'll move on here in a second, but I'll give you a little new rules trivia question. I stumped Andy Green of the Cubs with this the other night. This is my other surprise. How many illegal defense calls, violations, do you think we've seen the whole season so far?
And what is the punishment, by the way? I don't even know.
Well, it depends. It depends.
Okay. I'm going to say zero.
What do you think, Doug?
I mean, I certainly haven't seen anything. I think they're abiding by it, so I'm going to say zero.
All right. Zero is the popular guess. It's actually, there's one. Elvis Andrews had like his heel on the grass by a fraction of an inch.
He did a heel turn.
And they caught him. And here's the funny thing. And Andy was telling me about this, is that teams in their replay rooms are digging in on this, trying to find instances of it. Because if you make an out with two men on or something to end an inning, and in the replay, it shows like a guy had his feet on the grass. If the ball was hit to him, you can appeal. You can have it overturned, right? So everybody's watching this stuff. Nobody is cheating on that.
Get off my grass, man.
Really shocked
by that. Outfielders, we get off my lawn, man. Get off my lawn.
That's what it is. Okay. Get off my lawn. The ultimate get off my lawn. I love this.
Actual real get off my lawn.
Yes. All right, Ken. Now we can't let you go without playing America's new favorite game, Know Your Short Guy Baseball Trivia.
Oh, boy.
Just for the record, you're not mad at me for inventing this game in your honor, right?
No, I appreciate it. I'm honored, actually. Let's go. I mean, okay. Is there any secret that I'm short? I mean, this is not like offensive. It's reality. Okay. It's been reality my whole life.
Right. And like, I don't want anybody out there to think I hate short people. No, I love Ken Rosenthal. Okay,
you love Tim Kirk. There's a lot of other short people that you're friends with.
I do. Okay, we'll start with this. Who is the shortest pitcher to win a game this season? Is it Davey Garcia for the Yankees, B, Marcus Stroman for the Cubs, or C, Josh Harrison for the Phillies? See what I did there?
I'll still go with Marcus.
Yeah, very good. Davey Garcia is 5'9". He's just like Marcus Stroman, but he hasn't won a game.
Oh, Josh hasn't pitched
one
game.
Very tricky, yeah.
Yeah, obviously Josh Harrison hasn't won any games, although he has pitched two.
Now, you know Marcus's motto. Marcus's motto, and I think his branding, is HDMH, height doesn't measure your heart. And Marcus and I are brothers in spirit on this one.
Yeah, I've talked to him about
this. Well, he towers over me, but, you know, yeah. We're still talking
spirit. Yeah, do we think that he's really 5'9"? You've stood next to him. What do you think?
I don't know that he's 5'9". Now, the one I will share, when I stand next to Altuve and we've stood next to each other, we're almost the same exact size, which is unbelievable to me that he is such a great potential Hall of Fame player at this height. It's amazing.
I do believe that. We're gonna have to go with listed heights, though, on these questions. So you may not be 5'4.5" either. But we're going to let your listed height, literally.
Yeah.
I should mention
this issued a challenge on that. We're doing it in New York.
I should mention that Marcus once had me look up the shortest pitcher ever to win a Cy Young. You can conclude whatever you want from that. all right. These are going to get tougher from there.
Okay.
Okay. So we're going to assume you're 5'4.5" according to you. So here's the question: who's the all-time leader in career home runs by players? How should we phrase this? Whose listed height is shorter than your listed height? Whoa. I think I phrased that okay. All right. So What?
No, go ahead. Yeah, you go. Go ahead.
That's a tricky question now that you admitted
There's not many guys that are right, lower than 5'4.5".
I found a few, though. Okay, so this is all-time career home run leaders, players shorter than Ken Rosenthal. Is it A, Freddie Patek? Is it B, Topsy Hartzell? I just like saying Topsy. C, Wee Willie Keeler. So Freddie Patek, Topsy Hartzell, Wee Willie Keeler.
Well, I'm embarrassed to say I've never heard of Topsy. Wee Willie Keeler, I have heard of course. I'm suspecting he wasn't this short, so I'm going to go with Freddie, who was one of my early heroes.
Yeah, have you ever stood next to him?
No.
Okay, so we don't know if he's actually the height he says he is, right, but he's listed at 5'5", so he is therefore ineligible to win, even though he did hit the most home runs.
You throw a lot of curveballs in these trivia,
I'm so devious. Well, I mean, we've got a guy in the answer whose nickname is Wee Willie. Could you get a better hint than that?
Sometimes you've got to go with the opposite.
Right. Wee Willie Keeler was 5'4". He hit 33... Wow, homers. Topsy Hartzell hit 31.
Oh my goodness.
He also broke in 1998.
How tall
did they even
Topsy?
Have tape measures then? That's a good question. I think he was 5'4". He might have been 5'5". How do we even know? It was 1898.
You know what, too? I love
how do they even measure then?
Disqualifying.
Doug, I love this nickname, Topsy, for a short guy. So maybe
Topsy Turvy.
People can start calling me Vertical. Hey, man. Hey, Vertical. And that would be kind of cool.
Okay.
Nobody would ever do it. They'd more likely call me Horizontal. But whatever.
Vert for short. Yes. We'll do that. All right. Well, you're 0 for 2 in your own game here. So you got one more chance. Who is the last pitcher to win a game whose list is... Okay, I have to think about this. Whose listed height was shorter than your listed height? Was it A, Dennis Dinty Gearin for the Giants? Dinty. You don't see many Dinties anymore, right? Was it B, Salomon Torres for the Mariners? Or was it C, also the answer to Marcus Stroman's question to me, Bobby Shantz for the Phillies? Dinty Gearin, Salomon Torres, Bobby Shantz.
I don't believe Salomon Torres was short. Yeah, I'm going with Bobby Shantz. Him. Yeah, I don't remember.
Okay, you're going with Bobby Shantz, huh?
Yeah.
So you think I just dropped Dinty Gearin's name in there just for fun, huh? Okay, well, Salomon Torres was 5'5", if he was telling the truth.
Okay.
Bobby Shantz was 5'6". If he was telling the truth. Bobby Shantz, still alive, mowing his own lawn, playing catch, by the way. But the answer is Dinty Gearin, last won a game 100 years ago for the 1923 Giants.
See, Jason,
so how about that, man?
I have revealed my soul here today. And I have admitted that I'm probably not my listed height. And I believe some of these pitchers are lying about their height, and it's disturbing to me.
I think so.
You got to be proud of who you are.
Yeah,
for sure. Exactly right. So no, just the upshot of this, no pitcher as short as you has won or even started a game in the big leagues for over a century. So I have a thought. I wonder if we could convince some team that was out of the race to run you out there on the last day of the season, and that would make you the answer to this question. You up for that?
That would be a really bad idea.
When's the last time you pitched?
Oh, man, I don't know. Probably to my kids.
When's the last time? I'm sure you've thrown out the first pitch, right?
I did one of those at Long Beach State. That's the only one I've done, first pitch.
Really? Airborne? Was it airborne?
Yeah, it was legit. Yeah, it was fine.
Okay, there we go. That's all you need.
I didn't embarrass myself. Yeah. It wasn't 50 cents.
There's position players out there throwing 36 miles an hour.
I had a backstop at Wrigley. I mean, it's all good. I threw it off the back fence.
That's right. So, exactly. You'd have to do better than Glanville. Okay. So, all right. I want this to happen. If there's any GM listening out there and you think you're going to be out of the race, we got your starter for game 162 right here in this podcast.
I just looked up Daniel Ray. You remember Daniel Ray Herrera? I was looking him up because Buck.
I do remember him. Buck Shaw, yes, I like that guy.
So
Daniel Boone was another one.
Yeah,
Daniel
listed Boone. 5'6".
Yeah. Yeah, we don't believe their height, their listed height.
Yeah.
But whatever. Anyway, Ken, it's always so awesome to have you visit us here in Starkville. And Doug, I know you keep track of all the gifts that we bestow on our visitors. What can Ken expect on his way out of town?
Well, I got to move on from the statues because we have way too many in the parking lot.
The sculptor's way back.
So we have to. But I think since we're in the theme of Emmys, I think we'll melt down an Emmy and then build a statue out of an Emmy, and it will be in the form of Ken Rosenthal. So, we'll move on to
Doug. I would settle for a Penn Ivy League champion baseball T-shirt.
I think that's coming. They did win, right? I got to check it out.
Did they win the whole thing? I don't know.
Yeah, they had to win today, and they were up 16-2 in the sixth inning. So Stefania Bell, if you're out there, in your face, Princeton. But yeah, we got to figure it out.
Sounds good.
That little home field advantage going on there.
Yeah,
huh?
they earned
it. Didn't they host that tournament?
I mean, it's a pit. You know, you can't go to Philadelphia.
They were tweeting at Doug that they expected him to join them, but I didn't see any tweets at Ken Rosenthal.
Yeah, I didn't see that. That's
I wasn't on the baseball team.
Oh, that could be it.
Yeah, it could be. I was recruiting hard for the rowing team. They wanted me to be a coxswain, but that didn't happen.
Oh.
No.
I was the perfect height for that job.
Bro.
Yeah. They didn't have a jockey team, huh?
No, they didn't.
All right. Ken, you're the best, man. Always fun to have you join us here. Let's make it happen again soon.
Thanks, guys. That's appreciate good. It.
All right.
Guys tend to think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort, but it's possible to have it both ways. I'm all set for summer thanks to Mack Weldon. The Vesper polo shirt is so breathable you can wear it on the golf course, but it looks classy enough to wear to a party. The Maverick Tech chino short is ultra flexible, and the Pima crew neck t-shirt is perfect for those casual weekends. There's no need to be uncomfortable in your clothing ever again. Some guys just want to look good without calling attention to themselves. Mack Weldon apparel gives you understated good looks for understated confidence. Mack Weldon clothes are designed to fit your style and the demands of modern life. They look like regular clothes but feel like the latest in modern comfort. They're the go-to choice for guys who want to look great without even trying. Breathable underwear that keeps you cool, dry, and comfy all day. Crazy comfortable but elevated sweatpants. An upgraded classic polo with antimicrobial silver threads. An ultra-soft antimicrobial tee for when you need to stay fresh longer. That's the Silver Crew Neck T-shirt. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code MLBSHOW. That's MackWeldon.com. Promo code MLB Show. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Okay, it's that time again. It's time for listener trivia, our way of involving you, our favorite listeners in this show. And Doug, we nailed another one last week, man. So I believe we're now 8-3 in trivia since the start of spring training. 8-3. That's a level of excellence that, frankly, we've long been noted for not achieving. So, Doug, what's gotten into us?
What's the winning percentage on that, I think? Is that that Hall of Fame level?
It's 727, I believe.
Yeah, it's like an old plane back in the day, the 747. Yeah, I feel good about it. I'm just trying to take it one week at a time as our trivia knowledge continues to pour in from game experience. So I feel good, but I'm going to just lay low and just see how this one goes because I'd like to go, 9-3. And then I feel three times the wins as losses. That's magic land. And since the Penn Quakers, by the way, have now clinched a spot in the NCAA tournament. The baseball team has been waiting for a long time to outright win. I feel exceptionally excited right now. Very happy.
Yeah. That's enough Penn talk. Okay. Enough. We're going to get another question right this week. That's my prediction. Why the heck not? So on that note, let's welcome in this week's special trivia guest star. It is Jeff Stewart. Jeff, welcome to Starkville.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Jeff, your Twitter handle is SyracuseJeff44, right? So 44?
Absolutely.
So I'm deducing you went to Syracuse, America's finest institution of higher learning.
Class of 95.
Wow. Great to have you here. You know, I went to Syracuse. Producer Tim McMaster went to Syracuse. So you've come to the right place, my friend. Tim's not wearing his Syracuse baseball cap this week. So you're a Philly guy now, Jeff, is that right?
Yeah, I grew up outside Philadelphia and live in Allentown now, so home of the Iron Pigs. Yeah, Philly's AAA team.
Billy Joel, living in Allentown. Classic song.
All right, we are familiar with those Iron Pigs. All right, so I think that we have a shot at your question. Why don't you fire it at us, and then Doug will have some thoughts before we actually get around to answering it.
Okay. Well, you asked for third base theme trivia.
I did.
So in the 500 home run club, there are only two primary third basemen, Mike Schmidt and Eddie Matthews. But my question to you is, there are nine other members of the 500 home run club who played at least 50 games at the hot corner. Can you name those nine?
All right. This is a really fun question. If you listen to this show, you know that questions that end with, can you name those nine, are way beyond the Glanville line, right? Doug, how many of these nine do you feel we should have to get right?
Well, I'm going to use my, in honor, this is like a psychic moment, but I have my Phillies jersey back here, and there's a six on it. So I think that's very fitting. You do six out of nine. It's two thirds. It's kind of where we're shooting for here in our glorious trivia. But I, first of all, I didn't know there was that many 500 club. That's a lot. Is that the entire club? Like, I like the one for every position, but yeah, I think, you know, 6 out of 9 seems reasonable. I mean, that 6 is a huge number. I don't know.
All right. So Jeff, what do you think? Is 6 of 9 good with you?
I'm thinking 6 before you get 3 strikes. Mm.
Oh, 6 like, before we so get 3 strikes. Order? Ooh, you want to do that?
That's interesting.
So we'll just shoot some names at him, and he'll tell us yes or no with every name. This adds a whole new level of drama.
That is interesting.
This is
I like
good.
That.
We haven't kind of like, we haven't done it this way. Usually,
what's that? Press Your Luck? Isn't that the game? Press Your Luck. Remember that song? Okay.
Yeah, if this catches on, we too could be on the game show.
3
network.
Strikes.
Okay, so.
All right, well, we have to make sure we verify each answer, though, before we send it to him.
Okay, I got some of them. Some of these are easy. Okay, wait. Okay. All right, you ready?
Albert
Pujols. Okay. Albert Pujols started his career at third base. You good with guessing Albert Pujols, Doug?
Yes.
Okay, Albert Pujols.
And he played 110 games at the hot corner, okay. So he is correct.
All right. Harmon Killebrew. Same deal. You good with that, Dub?
Yep. Harmon Killebrew is also correct. 791 games.
I bet it. Okay. Jim Thome, I know, also started his career at third base. I'm a little fuzzy on the games, though. But what you think it's okay
to guess? I think that's a good guess. Yeah, I think it's a good guess.
Okay.
That is a good guess. 493 Whew. Games.
Wow. Wow. I didn't know it was that many. Wow, that's a relief. Okay then. A-Rod, yep. That's easy. Finished his career at third, yep. Right?
That's a gimme. Yep. Okay. 1,194 Ooh. Games there.
Okay.
Okay. And Miggy played third quite a bit.
Wait.
I guess he played 500 games.
Wait, what was what the question? You said Hall of Famer, is that right?
No, it's 500 home run club.
Oh, okay. That's right. Oh, yeah.
You're not in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah. Miguel Cabrera. He has 500 home runs? Yeah, that's right. He does. Miguel Cabrera. I didn't even think of him. Sorry. I'll go. Okay, yeah.
Jeff?
That is correct. When Prince Fielder was with the Tigers, Cabrera was playing third.
That's right.
697 games.
Okay, so what do we got? 5 already?
We have 5.
You've got 5.
Okay, Doug.
And no strikes.
No. Wow. So, Doug, don't screw this up, man. What do you got?
Oh, I'm just going off of you,
Who's
actually.
Who's on your list? Okay.
Ernie Banks, did he play third?
No, he played first? Short. He didn't play third.
You know, all short?
No.
Okay.
He played a lot of first. First and short, but not third.
First,
in
first.
Memory.
All right. What about Hank? And Hank Aaron. Did he play third?
Not,
all right.
No.
All right. What Ralph Kiner? Is he 500 club?
No. But no.
Is Mel Ott in there?
Tony Perez didn't make the 500 homer club, right?
Mel Ott. This is the
Edgar didn't. Molitor didn't.
Edgar.
Ripken. I don't think. Did Ripken make the 500 home run club? Did
Molitor,
not, right?
No. He had like 12 home runs. Did he have 12 home runs?
What about Cal Ripken?
500 home runs? He had 500 home runs?
No way, right?
No.
No way, right? No.
Let's see.
Oh. I got one.
Hank Greenberg?
I got a good one here. Hank Greenberg. All right, save him.
All right.
I got to guess. I know this guy played third. I have no idea if he played 500 games at third. What about Gary Sheffield?
He has 500 home runs?
Definitely played third base.
If he has 500 home runs.
Early on.
He has 500 home runs?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
Is that a final answer?
I'll put him in there, absolutely.
He's in that 500 home runs is not in the Hall of Fame club.
Wow.
So yes, he played 468 games at third base, so he is correct.
Good answer.
Wait, I thought he had to play.
Play 50 games. 50.
Okay, we're in. Okay.
Wait a minute, let's keep going.
Okay, so are we 6 for 6?
You are 6 for 6.
Wow,
that was better than I thought.
Okay, so we got.
You want to press your luck and keep trying to get?
You know, right now we're in good shape here, Doug. We're just all we're going to do is just tarnish our record.
Would you like the final three?
Yeah, I think we should just ask for the final three and just say, okay. Hey, we're 6 for 6. We nailed this thing. We're undefeated. Why do we want to go ahead and get any wrong? Right.
Well, you should have listened to Doug on Ernie Banks, who played 69 games.
Oh, no. Way to go, Doug.
All right.
And then you have to go way back to Jimmy Fox and Mel Ott.
I did say Mel Ott. Oh, my goodness.
He did say Mel.
Now.
Wow.
You know, you said Mark McGwire never played third. played 20 games at third. And in fact, his rookie baseball card lists him as a third baseman.
Wow, good one. No.
And the one I thought you would guess was Adrian Beltre, who had 477 home runs.
I knew he was just short.
But was just short. Or Chipper Jones, who had 468 home runs.
I forgot about Chipper. Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Yeah, I knew he was just short. What else? The other thing I know is we're on fire, Doug. 9-3 now in 2023. Do you think we need to have any level of guilt that the Glanville line is enabling us to subtly cheat?
Well, we've revamped the line. Remember, we used to, in this case, we would have both guessed 9. Okay. Separate answers.
Right. We had to stop that.
That was crazy.
that had to stop.
No, but I will accept this. Terrible. I will volunteer for steroid testing just to prove that we are doing this legitimately. I'll accept that. But I think we're all right.
Okay. I don't think that there's any performance enhancing tribute drug that I'm aware of, but I could be wrong. But whatever. Here's the best part. As you all know, once we get through thrashing around trying to answer these questions, we then bring in the mayor of Starkville, Tim McMaster, Syracuse grad, to play another one of his sensational play-by-play clips involving this week's answer. So we got a question on the 500 Homer Club. Think of the possibilities. Tim, what do you got for us this week, man? Got any good Mel Ott homers?
Well, but the tricky thing here is I had to go with a home run from one of these guys when they were playing third base. Ooh. So that,
yeah, right,
that complicated matters a little bit, but I got one. And the winner is Jim Thome. Early in his career, he had some big moments with the Cleveland then Indians in the playoffs. So going back to 1995, he actually had a home run in the World Series that year, but they lost. But in the ALCS, he had a big one, down a run in game 5 against Chris Bosio.
The 2-0. A long drive to right and tell it goodbye. And when you don't have quite enough hop on the ball to throw it past hitters and you fall behind 2-0, this is what happens.
Well, I'll guarantee you this. That last one was a fastball. And Jim Thome, as soon as he hit it, knew it was gone to the second deck and right. A fastball right down the middle. And look at the crowd behind Thome. Everybody knew it was out of here. His second home run in postseason play. And the Indians have the lead now at 3-2.
And we added a fourth Syracuse person to the trivia segment.
Jeff, do you see what you inspired, man? You got Bob Costas and Bob Uecker on the call to honor your question.
I love it.
There you go. All right. Listen, really fun question, Jeff. So glad you went to Syracuse, where they obviously taught you everything that anyone should know about the art of great baseball trivia. So thanks for the question. Please come back again sometime.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Strange but true.
You know, Doug, I look forward to these strange but true segments every week. This week is no exception because we got one this week that's just, it's so up both of our alleys. So before we get into it, let me ask you a question. Do you believe it is possible for a man to hit a grand slam home run, despite the fact that he has no position, including DH?
Yeah, that is interesting. I love it, though. It reminds me of when I would pinch hit, and then they pinch hit for me, the pinch hitter. And I was in the game, but I wasn't in the game. So I call those invisible appearances.
Right.
So I feel like this is something we need to dig into deeper. Yeah, I like it.
We've dug into it many times, just not on the podcast. Oh, yeah. So anyway, the beauty of baseball is what we just described actually happened. So this was Monday. The Cardinals were playing the Brewers. They scored 9-1 in the 8th inning. Paul Goldschmidt reaches first base. Ollie Marmol says, I think I'm going to use a pinch runner for Paul Goldschmidt right now. Do I have any backup catchers sitting around? And what do you know? There was Andrew Kisner. So he goes in to run. He scores a run. Now, later in the inning, the Cardinals just refuse to make outs. So his spot in the order comes around again before he's had a chance to bat or assume any position in this game. We'll dig in on this, but let's hear what happened next.
Nice set position, good balance. Swing, fly ball, deep left. Kisner's hit a grand slam. Pitcher or not, Andrew Kisner has had an unbelievable week at the plate for the Cardinals.
He really has. Came in this inning as a pinch runner for Paul Goldschmidt and ends up cashing in the grand slam.
Oh, man. What just happened? That was a man with no position hitting a grand slam homer. So I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, how often does that happen in baseball? Guess what? We get up with that. So two things. First is, since 1959, only two other men with no position have hit a grand slam homer. One of them was a guy named Gene Stevens for the Red Sox in 1959. The cool thing was he did it after pinch running for Ted Williams. The other was Rajay Davis. This is for Oakland, September 5th, 2008. Pinch ran for Jack Cust, and this same thing happened. So that's, okay, so that's beautiful right there. But now, the position versus no position part. So Andrew Kisner hit this grand slam off Mike Brousseau of the Brewers. What do we know about Mike Brousseau, Doug? He's an infielder. So I think this means that a guy with no position hit a grand slam off a position player. Okay. So why do we think this is exciting other than we're weird? He's the first player that we know of for sure who ever entered any game in history as a pinch runner and then hit a grand slam that inning off a position player. Okay, so I have no idea why I'm so excited about that, but obviously I have issues. Doug's laughing hysterically. He has issues. All those things are well-known facts. But Doug, here's what I want you to help me with. This was a man with no position. Feels wrong, right? You're a bright, creative fellow. What should we call his position or lack thereof? Where did Andrew Kisner actually come from?
Well, you know I love the space program, so it's very tempting. We have to lean into something called extraterrestrial appearances. So yeah. I think E.T. is very fitting. We need to bring him back. I've been on a ride recently in Orlando. So I call him extraterrestrial. You don't know where they came from. They just appeared. He is allowed to phone home. Now he has a cell phone, so that's fine. And so I think because it's not of this earth and it's celestial, we have to go and leave this particular galaxy to accomplish the metrics that we need. So I'm going to call him ET for short. And that's the type of appearance we're going to call it. He is blank. He is unknown. He's invisible. And maybe human eyes cannot pick him up. But then next thing you know, he was circling the bases and you don't even know how he did it. So I like that. I feel like if we go interstellar, we find the answers.
I like it too, because, you know, it would fit very neatly into the box score. Kisner, PR-ET. I love it. Works great. But one more thing now. Not only did he not have a position.
Yes.
He's a man who has a letter in his name.
Why?
That he obviously refuses to own up to. It's spelled K-N-I-Z-N-E-R. How is that Kisner, Doug?
I don't know, but this is the beauty of it. If he is truly extraterrestrial, which we've established he was in this game, he therefore has his own dialect, his own planetary language. And in this world, I'm not sure what planet, the N is silent if it's in the first syllable of the name. So the N is silent, and then the second N takes over where there's some Z in there too. So that's what I call it. So I think it's totally fine. It makes perfect sense. It's otherworldly, and therefore he has his own language.
Apparently. But I want you to think of the possibilities. If we no longer have to pronounce the letter N, I guess my name is now J-So.
Yes.
And your last name is now Glavill? It just seems wrong, Doug, don't you think? Hey, it just seems odd.
In his planet, this is absolutely correct. And, you know, it reminds me of when the late and great Harry Carey tried to call a game where I faced Tom Glavin. It was very complicated, as you can imagine. Because Glanville for Glavin, Glavin, Glanville, Glavin, Glavin, believe. So this is how it all comes down. And little did I know that was a premonition to the Andrew Kistner era of his invisible, molecularly celestial home run that he hit that nobody saw because he wasn't actually had a position. Kind of like musical chairs for planets. He couldn't fit them in there, so he just appeared. So very happy of that we witnessed this.
Also fittingly, his slam that we just heard was called by Chip Carey.
Oh, see that? There you go. I mean, this is destiny now. This is now destiny.
Of course it is. All right, that's going to do it for this week's show. We'll be bringing you podcast magic just like this all season long on The Athletic Baseball Show, which is available in its entirety, absolutely free, everywhere you get your podcasts. And if you'd like to read my Weird and Wild columns or any of the fabulous baseball coverage in The Athletic, we can tell you how to do that. We're past Mother's Day now. We haven't passed Father's Day. We may or may not have passed graduation day in your household. So, did you know you can still buy a year of The Athletic for your favorite grad or dad, and I'm guessing even still for mom, for just $19.99 for the whole year by going to theathletic.com/giftsale. Also remember, you too can be part of this podcast. That's because every show we pick some fun listener trivia question, and then that lucky listener gets to join us right here and prove once again there's almost no baseball trivia question we can't get wrong, unless it's 2023, in which case we'll definitely get it right. So if you'd like to join us with the trivia thing, you can email us at starkville@theathletic.com. That's Starkville with an E on the end. Or you can do what Jeff Stewart did, what most people do. They send us these questions via Twitter, and assuming Twitter is still in existence next week, that would mean you could find Doug Glanville, a man who still has his blue check mark. I can't recall where someone could find you.
Yes.
Could
you help with that? Yes. Well, a simple search is fine. And you click on people, you put in your name in. But if you don't want to do that, you just go straight to me at Doug Glanville, DougGlanville. And there is an N in there. Yes, that's right. Just make sure.
Doesn't matter if you pronounce it, just type it in. I am Jason with a Y-S-T, so that's at JAYSONST. Please remember, hashtag your questions, hashtag StarkvilleQS. One more thing, I also posted this call for trivia on Facebook over the weekend. Got a few questions, so that's another way that you can reach us. We're just expanding our reach every week. Amazing. Doug, thanks for playing. Thanks to Ken Rosenthal for visiting us. Thanks to Jeff Stewart for the great trivia question. Thanks to the mayor of Starkville, Tim McMaster, for producing us and putting up with us. And thanks to you all for listening. Doug and I will see you soon.
Starkville!
Starkville.